Today is from the Gospel of St. John, chapter 8, beginning with the 31st verse. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." They answered him, "We are descendants of Abraham. We have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean by saying you will be made free?" And Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I tell you, everyone who commits a sin is a slave to sin. And the slave has no permanent place in the household. The Son has a place in the household forever. So if the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed." The Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
You may be seated, and I'd like to invite the children forward to head out to Word for Children. This is a time where they hear a story that relates to the gospel and also a version of the gospel more at their level. And our reader today is Jan Hockel. There she is. All right. So if you'll head on out, you're going to be right out there in those comfy chairs. Many of you know the routine. Oh, there he goes. He's heading the right direction. So today is Reformation Sunday, a Sunday where we remember the movement of the Spirit in Martin Luther, his willingness, his courage to stand up and breathe a breath of fresh air, of hope, and freedom into a church and world that was full of fear. So in that same reforming spirit, we have a guest speaker today. Dale Kwong, who is an author and a playwright, and she is also a gay Christian. She's going to tell at least part of her story. Yeah.
Thank you, Pastor Phil, and thank you, I forget the name of your church, the Lutheran Church, for inviting me. I have been here before. Betty Jane is a friend of mine, and we launched a book here about a year and a half ago. And so I know you are an affirming church and a warm and welcoming place. But I actually don't go to church regularly, so it is a little bit, it's new for me sometimes. I want to put my story in context for you. I was born in 1960. I'll do the math for you. I just turned 55 last month. And so I grew up a native Calgarian, third generation Chinese Canadian, not far from here in Chinook Park. And grew up in the 60s and 70s during the rise of black power, women's liberation, the sexual revolution. But back then, kids, teenagers, weren't as aware as they are now. So I would describe myself, compared to today's children, rather naive and ignorant. And you'll see that later in my story, how naive I was. And, you know, there weren't the same kind of role models for a Chinese gay Christian that there would be now. There was no Rosie O'Donnell, Ellen DeGeneres, The L Word, Modern Family, certainly no Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner characters in the social media at the time. And we, you know, the world was quite different then. I see a lot of silver hairs here, so some of you know what I'm talking about, but some of you younger folks, I mean, we didn't have Google or Wikipedia. I would look things up in the encyclopedia. We used things called phone books instead of Googling. And that was my life back then. And I didn't know that I was gay till quite late, actually. Like, when I hear about teenagers who figure it out when they're teens, like, I think I might have figured it out sooner nowadays. But back then, I mean, I was in my 30s before I really figured this out. And so what I had was a lot of serious relationships with girlfriends and women through my whole life that were quite intense for me, maybe not so much for them. And then I would reach a point where I knew, oh, there's something not quite right with this relationship, and I would sort of break up with the person. And I have a series of broken friendships behind me up until even actually my 40s, because when I did come out, I lost some relationships that way as well. And so the interesting challenge in my life came in 1981. And, it was actually New Year's Day, 1982. And I graduated the year before, and the summer after graduation, I joined a Bible study. And so I had been not raised in a... I mean, we went to church at Christmas and so forth, but we weren't what you would call a, you know, evangelical Christian family. We were just churchgoers, I guess. And so when I joined this Bible study, I learned about accepting Christ personally and became of faith. And so the challenge that I accepted on New Year's Day 1982 was to be a Christian for 1 year. And it was kind of like a trial. And so I figured that, well, I'm young enough in my life. If it turns out well, then, you know, I have this thing for the rest of my life. And if it doesn't, I've only wasted 1 year of my life. I'm quite young. And so I kind of accepted that way. I was like, okay, God, I'm giving you a chance. I'm going to be a Christian for this next year and see what happens. And I will tell you, I'm still a Christian, but perhaps not the definition that I had in my mind back then, or even that other Christians might have. But I do still have faith. And so, actually sitting in the pew listening to Pastor Phil introduce me, I thought, gay Christian, I know a lot of people think that's an oxymoron, or perhaps not even possible. And I was one of those people at the beginning. And what started my quest was, in fact, very similar to the scripture that was read, and that was the promise that the truth will set you free. And I was always restless as a person. And I thought, well, okay, let's see what is the truth. And so that has been sort of a motivating thing for me through my journey, seeking the truth. And I became probably one of those Christians that I don't care for right now. I became fully committed, evangelical. I started in the United Church, then I transferred to Pentecostal Church, and then ended up in a Baptist church. And in my 20s, I moved to China for a year. I became involved with OMF. I was smuggling Bibles into China, meeting with itinerant pastors because it was quite communist back then. And I guess kind of a judgmental kind of Christian. And so when I came back in my late 20s, I started a Bible study in my home on Saturday mornings. And then this terrible thing happened. I had not had a lot of relationships through my 20s, and I fell in love. But I fell in love with a woman in my Bible study. And as you might guess, that caused a lot of turmoil for me. And again, we were very good friends and had a very close relationship. And I just thought it was a bad joke. I mean, like, as a very evangelical, strong, you know, judgmental Christian, falling in love with another woman was like really horrible. And so I decided that I needed to tell this friend, and like I didn't want to just like have leave with no explanation. So one night I told her that I couldn't be friends anymore because I couldn't stand to be in the same room. I was so attracted. It just was so frustrating to me to not be able to act on that. And she responded in a really unexpected way, which was she responded with rage and anger. And I couldn't understand that because we had been hanging out a lot. We had actually been sort of cuddling a little bit. And I stayed over at her place many times and we shared the bed. Nothing had happened, but like I thought we were quite close, obviously, because I was falling in love with her. So I left, and at the time I sort of had a weird thing happening with my roommate because there was this triangular relationship and my roommate didn't know why I was so close to this other person. So I had nowhere to go. I drove around the city until like 4 a.m. and finally I phoned her because I had nowhere to go, and right away she said, just come back. I don't know where you are. Just come back. And so I went back and we ended up just holding each other and falling asleep on the couch, and eventually, we became partners. In fact, I learned that she was also in love with me, which she wrestled with because she had been raised in an evangelical home. Her sister was married to a Salvation Army minister. And, of course, her whole family had a perspective that was quite different and more judgmental than I, you know, had grown up with myself. And so when we first were discovering this, and this is the early 90s, and to put it in context, Ellen DeGeneres hadn't even come out yet. And so in 1993, when Ellen came out, it made the cover of Time magazine. I mean, that's how big of a deal it kind of was back then. And so this is pre-Ellen. And but we weren't completely sure I wasn't completely sure we were still, we were in fact lesbians. And so when we first came out, the first people we came out to were lesbian friends of ours. And we said, hey, we want you to know, you know, we're a couple now, but we're not lesbians. That's what we actually told them. We said, we're not lesbians. We're just in love with the spirit of each other. And that spirit just happens to be in another woman. And in fact, I was so unsure about being a lesbian that I contacted a coworker who I had heard was a lesbian, because I didn't know I had any lesbians in my life. And I asked her to go for breakfast because she worked the night shift. So she got off work at 8 a.m. and we met probably at Denny's or something like that. And she is a vegetarian. So she probably ordered, you know, whatever vegetarians have, I guess, fruit for breakfast. And I ordered my Grand Slam. And I will mention another lesbian at the time was Katie Lang. Now, Katie Lang wasn't famous for being a lesbian at that time. She was famous for being anti-Alberta beef, or anti-beef, if you'll recall. And so I had these two lesbians in my life. They were both slim brunettes who were vegetarians. And I'm having breakfast with the one that is accessible to me. And I said, Brenda, and I cleared with her. I saw her at the Pride Parade this year, and I'm like, I use your story all the time. And she said, oh, go for it. And so I said, Brenda, I've heard you're a lesbian. Is that true? And she said, yes. She confirmed she was. I said, I think I'm a lesbian, but I'm not sure. And she said, well, tell me why you think you're a lesbian. And I said, well, I've fallen in love with my best friend, and it's a woman. She said, well, sounds like you're a lesbian. Why do you think you're not a lesbian? And I said, well, you know, I'm Chinese, and we have stir fry, and even in a stir fry, you have little bits of meat and stuff, and I'm just not sure I could give up meat. And she said, pardon me? And I'm like, well, are all lesbians vegetarian? And she said, you know, I give her full credit, because she didn't even laugh at me. She knew how serious I was. I was like anxiously awaiting her answer. And she said, well, actually, you know, sometimes my girlfriend eats chicken wings. So I thought, oh, okay, that's sort of, it was a mixed kind of response for me, because it, on one hand, confirmed I was a lesbian, but then that wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to be. Because in my family, what my parents would have loved is for me to have married a Chinese doctor, Chinese lawyer, Chinese accountant. So here I was, not only with someone who wasn't Chinese and not a doctor, accountant, or lawyer, but also a woman. And so that, you know, argument that it's a choice to be gay really irritates me when I hear that, because I know maybe for some people it, they feel it's like a free will choice. I've tried to be straight. I tried for 33 years and it just wasn't working for me. And no matter how hard I try, I'm sure I could not be straight if I wanted to be. But as a Christian, this now led me to a lot of problems, right? Because I was a judgmental Christian. And so I suddenly felt unsafe at church, because I felt that I knew what other people were thinking about me or judging me on or condemning me for. And so I tried different churches. I stopped going to the Baptist church that I was at, and I tried different denominations. And, you know, I drove long distances trying different churches. And I remember sitting in a church one time, and because I missed fellowship, I missed the singing, and I missed the prayers, and as a Christian, to be separated from that corporate worship. And I was sitting there on one hand enjoying the service, but then on the other thinking, oh my God, this person beside me probably hates my guts if they knew the full truth. Because I was at a very evangelical church that preached, you know, homosexuality is a sin, which, I mean, there's so many things that are sin. And so I didn't have any context to put all this stuff into. And so fortunately at that time for me, and this is, as I say again, the early 90s, I ended up at the Old Y, and there was a church there that was led by I was going to say a condemned pastor, but a former pastor who realized he was gay, was leading a group of ragtag gay men, and it was, so there was like anywhere from 5 to 15 gay men, no lesbians, and myself, and there was this transgender keyboardist, and I, at that time, had no idea what transgender was. And we would sing, and as you can imagine, 12, 5 to 12 people singing just is not the same as sitting in a church worshiping. But for me, that was all I had at the time, and it fulfilled a need that I needed. And then my partner and I eventually ended up at a local church, which was close to our home, and we came out to the minister there. And I don't want to say what denomination it is, but we knew it was a fairly open denomination. And the minister said, oh, yeah, you know, as soon as I saw you guys in the balcony, I knew you were a couple. And we said, oh, well, is it okay if we worship here? And he said, oh, yes, yes, nothing can separate you from the love of God. And so, of course, I knew that message, and so I embraced that. And we worshiped there for more than 8 years. And my partner is a professional musician, so she was quite involved in the music ministry there, and I had talents that I used there, and we held day retreats and went to the women's conference. We're very involved at this church. And what happened is that later, about 9 years later, after we had broken up, my partner found a new partner at the same church, and they went to be married there and discovered they weren't allowed to be married. And that there were certain things that, as gay Christians, they just weren't allowed to have at this church. And a former, a friend of mine who was still attending there had told me what happened, and I was actually quite shocked. And it's funny, because I said to Pastor Phil before I came today, I said, you know, it's hard because there's triggers for me when I go to church. And one of them is when people say, oh, nothing can separate you from the love of God. And that's because that was actually used in a way against me. I mean, it was used to assure me, and then it was taken away. And so, you know, it's difficult when I go to church. The last time I went was at Kensington, or what's it called, Kensington United? Hillhurst United. And near the end of the service, the pastor did say, you know, nothing can separate you from the love of God. And it just felt like a knife being twisted in me. And I actually ended up running out in tears. And so it's difficult to have like a wound that the scab keeps getting ripped off of. And that's what it feels like when, you know, you hear comments in the media or things in church. So I can even be in a safe environment and still feel threatened, I guess is what I'm saying. So as I said, my partner and I broke up, and she had initially asked me to stop attending morning service, and for some reason I allowed that. And eventually, so I went to the evening service, but it wasn't the same for me. And eventually I just stopped going to church, except for perhaps Christmas and Easter. And even then, as I say, sometimes I find that uncomfortable. But I do believe that I have a relationship with God, that no matter what happens, nobody can take that away from me, and that I just choose not to be involved in the organized church because, as you might guess, like some of his believers aren't necessarily all that friendly to me. But I do claim that truth, and that the truth has set me free in other ways. And I was actually sitting there thinking, well, I never would have guessed, you know, 15 years ago that speaking to a church like this would be part of my ministry, and I suppose in some ways it is. So I'm going to tell you now about something that happened more recently this summer. And I consider myself lucky because I've made it through the end of this story or to where I am presently because I do still have a strong foundation. Excuse me. And knowing that God loves me and that no one can take that away. But even despite legislation that we have, you know, barring homophobic behavior and changing attitudes of society, there are these places that are unsafe. And what happened to me is I was at a writing retreat this summer, and there was a pastor was a part of this program. He was a self-published poet, and he actually was going around having conversations with people, sort of trying to rile people up, I think. But I didn't know this. And so one day when I was in a very vulnerable place because I was open to my writing, I was trying to avoid being with people. And I sat at a table that was for about 12 people, and there was actually only one person there, and she was on the end. So I sat on the other end of it, and he was having a conversation with her. His name is Murray, and her name was Melanie. And Murray was saying I wasn't paying attention to them because I had just finished crying over something else to do with my writing. So I was very in a very quaky state. And so I was ignoring them at first, but then when I listened in, I realized they were having a anti-gay conversation. And he was talking about how all the gays were going to go to hell. And Melanie was defending, thank goodness, she was defending everything and saying, well, doesn't the Bible say, you know, we're supposed to stone people who are adulterers? And he had some answer for that. And then he gave another example. And she said, well, I guess you don't know many gay people. And he claimed that he did. And so finally he went away. This conversation lasted, I would say, 3 to 5 minutes, closer to five. And after he left, I slid over to her and I said, Melanie, did I hear that correctly? Like, I was trying to mind my own business, but it seemed like you guys were having an anti-gay conversation. And she said, well, I wasn't, but Murray was. And she said, did you notice how quickly he backed down when I defended? And I said, yeah, but like, I mean, the knife had already gone in. And so I had just finished speaking to the director of the program. I went back to him and I said, oh, you know, Stephen, there's something else I need to speak to you about. And he said, oh, this is getting to be regular. And I said, well, I sure hope not. So I told him what happened. And he said, I'm sorry, we don't have a policy that addresses this. We have an anti-harassment policy. And this doesn't really fall in that category. So I can't really do anything about it. So I recommend that you just avoid Murray for the rest of the week. So if you can imagine, I'm in this retreat center that has a dining room and all these rooms and the great outdoors and everything, and I'm there for a whole week more, and I've just been advised to avoid this person. And so, you know, I basically became a vampire. I, like, kept very nocturnal hours and, you know, would only come up at the last second to eat because there's no guarantee of when I would run into this person. And so I changed all my habits just to avoid him. And on Saturday night, Marian Taves was at this conference, and they had a reading that was open to the public. And so a lot of people came to hear her read. And after the reading, there was this beverage table that was there all week that basically just had lemon water. But this time, for the reading, they had put out iced tea and lemonade. And I still feel silly when I tell this story, but I think it demonstrates the depth of how much this affected me. Murray stood there and was speaking to some people for about an hour. And I just didn't even feel like I could approach the beverage table because I was worried of something being said or overhearing something. And I just sat in a corner and I was thinking, wow, I'm afraid to approach this table. And look at the control it has over me. And, you know, it seems silly. I'm 55 years old. I've been out for more than 30 or close to 30 years, and yet I didn't feel I had the strength to be in this unsafe environment. And so then I was telling a friend about it, and she totally missed the point. She said, well, just so you know, there's water bottles in the basement. And I was like, yeah, that's not quite the same thing, is it? Like, it's just, you're missing what I'm saying here. So I want to commend you guys for having a church that makes a difference, for being an affirming church. And I want you to know it makes a difference. Even though I don't come here, and I do know that I am welcome. Betty invites me all the time. I think she's on commission or something. But it's, you know, I'd rather sleep in. I've got a million reasons not to come, but I know you're here. And that, and I do actually meet younger gay Christians, younger in faith or younger in age. And I list this as one of the affirming churches in Calgary that they could attend because, you know, I know that when they come here, they will be welcome. But not always, right? Because we can't monitor. Phil said, well, I can't guarantee that someone won't say something offensive because you don't know. And so I just would encourage you. I know I feel really honored to be here today on what's supposed to be a very special Sunday for Lutherans. You know, there's a lot of pressure to deliver, like, something amazing today. But I would just encourage you that that same affirmation that you as a church offer to people, that there are ways that you in your personal walk can make a difference and be open so that if you met someone who was gay or questioning, that they would feel comfortable coming to you. And you know, rainbow stickers, making a point of telling someone you go to an affirming church, explaining what an affirming church is. A lot of people don't even know what an affirming church is. And it's funny because there was another church close to Elbow Drive that has two lesbian ministers. And they were not an affirming church a couple years ago, and I did a theater project with them, and we had a function afterwards, and I had encouraged them to become an affirming church, and they said, well, we have a lesbian ministry team. Like, why wouldn't people know this is a safe place? And so then I told them my story, and I said, no one can assume, you know, just because you have lesbian ministers doesn't mean you're an affirming congregation. Like, the whole process your church went through, which is written up in, Betty knows the, if you want to know more about it, Betty has the book that it's in, and I have a story in that anthology as well. A family, what is it? A family by any other name. I would encourage you to read that and become familiar with it, and that you can make a difference on an individual level in addition to making a difference on the church level. And I thank you very much for the opportunity for having me today. Thank you.
Can I give you a hug?
Yes! I love your cross, by the way.
Thank you, Dale. Jesus said, if you continue my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What drove Martin Luther to do what he did 500 years ago was the power of the word. He dwelled in the word, and that word with a capital W, Christ, spoke to him and said, the people are living in a sea of fear.